Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Lance Meadow, the phone number, Paratee, is 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. If you would like to interact with us that way, Lance, a game for the Giants, trying to break into the win column for the first time, and you can make the argument, based on the circumstances, this might be the toughest game the Giants have had on their schedule so far this year.
Well, in terms of the defense, certainly. I mean, they've played a number of talented pass rushers throughout the course of this season, but I think Denver is by far probably as close to a complete defense as you're going to see in the NFL, mainly because I think the secondary complements the front seven. The front seven complements the secondary. They have playmakers at all levels of their defense, including the linebacking core. They're good at getting to the quarterback. They're opportunistic. So this is going to be a very difficult defense to solve, to take advantage of, to find openings consistently. I mean, if there's any game, and it goes without saying, you have to be well disciplined, but this is not the type of team that you want to give favorable field position to and give gifts to, because they will gladly take them and they will gladly capitalize. And I think what complicates matters is, as the injury report is already released, the Giants are going to be without a number of notable players, in addition to, we know, they lost Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, and Dwayne Harris. So the six we know that are going to be inactive: Jonathan Casillas, Romeo Okwara, who showed up on the injury report the other day with a knee injury,
sprained his knee at practice,
Paul Perkins, Weston Richburg, still in concussion protocol, Sterling Shepard out with the ankle injury, and Olivier Vernon also nursing the ankle injury, and Landon Collins is questionable, so he's iffy. He very well could be the seventh player.
Yeah, absolutely. When it rains, it pours, right?
Oh, I mean, indeed.
Injuries all of a sudden have become a big factor. They focus on the wide receiver position last week, and now they're continuing to spread to the defense. Vernon, of course, hasn't played in a game and a half now after leaving shortly after halftime a couple games ago when the Giants played the Buccaneers. Paul Perkins has been out with a rib injury since that game. Jonathan Casillas, one of the defensive leaders, played through an injury last week. Weston Richburg left the game with a concussion. He's still out for now a second consecutive week. So, it's hard enough to go in Denver to beat the Broncos. I mean, they've been dominant at home this year. They've killed teams at home this year. And now the Giants have to go there with not a lot of bullets in their gun. So they're going to have to really try to adjust here and try some creative things, throw some things at the wall, see if it sticks. I don't know if you can go in there and just, play your ho-hum, any other type of game. I think you're going to have to try to do some things here to make up for a lot of these absences, to try to surprise the Broncos, make some big plays. Because I think, you're going to have to count on some big plays and takeaways if you want to win this game in Denver Sunday night.
Well, I would point to the latter, I think, of the two that you threw out there, John. I think takeaway is a must in a game like this, just to change field position or something on special teams just to take advantage of. Because if you look at the amount of points Denver's giving up over the course of the season, I mean, they're barely giving up anything. The Raiders scored 10 points on them. Granted, I know they were without Derek Carr and they're banged up, but even the previous opponents, the Chargers in week one, they scored 24. They didn't put up all their points until the fourth quarter, essentially. For three quarters, they could not solve this Denver defense. And that brings me to, if there's any issue for the Broncos, it's almost like they take their foot off the pedal in the fourth quarter when maybe they build that comfort zone and teams have been able to capitalize.
But they're allowing 18.5 points per game, by the way, just for the record.
Which is nothing.
Which is ranked seventh in the NFL. Only five teams are allowing fewer points. The Bills, the Bengals, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, the Seahawks, and the Steelers.
And the Giants themselves at times have had trouble scoring. So this is not necessarily an ideal combination, that goes without saying. But I would agree with you. Some type of opportunistic play, some type of game-changing play to me is necessary.
Special teams play, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, look at how Buffalo is the only team that beat the Broncos. And the reason why Buffalo beat them is Denver was very careless with the football. Trevor Siemian had a few interceptions. There were some costly penalties, including one late by Von Miller where he was trying to play a joke on Tyrod Taylor. And that helped move the chains. So, those are the types of things you need to really knock off a well-disciplined team like Denver.
Absolutely. I looked at the Denver's defense on tape this morning. Surprisingly, they don't actually play a lot of press man. You think of their corners as being these like really physical and aggressive corners. They actually play awful lot more than you think. They do play a lot of man. They also mix in some zone. And I think the reason, Lance, that they want to play off a little bit is that it gives them the opportunity to go after the football. And you mentioned that they're opportunistic. They have four interceptions this year over the course of the year. Chris Harris has one. Talib has one. Justin Simmons, their safety, has one.
And Roby
and
has
Bradley
one.
Roby has the other one. Correct. That was Darian one against
Stewart
San Diego.
Is the only one.
Correct.
In the start executive.
So all these guys can do it, and they want to watch the quarterback and watch the football. And I think one of the dangerous things with the wide receivers this week, Lance, is that the great receivers in this league know how to not only run routes but also deceive. And I think, you know, Odell Beckham doesn't just go running out. He fakes it in, then he goes out. And, you know, things of that nature. You know what I mean? So I think the Giants had to be very careful this week in how their wide receivers sell their routes. Because if the Broncos start anticipating where Eli is going to go with the ball and what routes these wide receivers are running, they're going to try to jump them, and they're going to try to force takeaways. And if the Giants get behind and Eli has to go into comeback mode and he has to try to maybe press a little bit and force things and be a little bit more aggressive, that's when the turnovers can come the other way. And I think the Giants have to be very careful to protect the football this week because the Broncos like to take it away.
Well, and remember, you know, you talk about running routes. There's going to be a lot of wide receivers that are going to be on the field in a regular season game for the first time ever.
Which is my point.
Yeah, Ed Egan and Travis Rudolph. Granted, they've been in preseason games, but they didn't go up against Aqib Talib and Chris Harris and other Pro Bowl secondary players.
Yeah, there are zero NFL regular season snaps for Travis Rudolph and Ed Egan. Zero. Yeah.
Roger Lewis clearly has some experience. Tavarius King has experience. But
some, not a lot.
Correct. Not an overwhelming amount, but those two in particular who are going to see snaps, I mean, Egan especially in the slot, and you figure they may even use Shane Vereen a little bit, I would assume, in the slot, given they're down some wide receivers. Evan Ingram, I'm sure, will be moved around. So there's going to be players that are going to be out of position. There's going to be players that are getting their first taste of NFL regular season football. That's why you have to be well-disciplined. You can't afford mistakes. You can't afford penalties, because this is the type of defense that will gladly capitalize off of those situations, and they'll score off of those situations, which is exactly what the Chargers did last Sunday. I mean, the Giants, they had costly turnovers, they had costly penalties, and the Chargers, for the most part, all throughout the course of the game, were able to turn that into points. And that's the last thing you can afford to do when you're 0-5 and you've been very up and down yourself.
Yeah, the one thing the Broncos haven't done is recover any fumbles. They only have 4 takeaways on the year, all 4, all the interceptions I mentioned. They have not taken the ball away with the fumbles yet, forcing fumbles, though they will try to do that and get their hands on the football. And that comes back to the pass rush, and we've talked about their secondary and how good they are, Lance, but they can rush the passer too. You have Wolf, obviously you have Von Miller, who's, you know, they'll move him around the same way the Chargers move Melvin Ingram around, so it makes it difficult to chip and double team him. But for the most part, he'll be over the right tackle. We'll see who that ends up being. It could be Bobby Hart again, it could be Justin Pugh. Ben McAdoo has not made that clear throughout the course of the week. I guess John Jerry's good to go this week. He hasn't been on the injury report, so he should be good to go. Whether he starts at right guard or DJ Fluker, we'll have to wait until game day to find out. Ben McAdoo would not tip his hand at the press conference today. And that's another thing. I mean, you have to protect Eli, and, you know, if you can get to Eli Manning, you can knock the ball away. Von Miller is very good at the strip sack. So that's another thing you have to be worried about if you're the Giants offense.
Well, I mean, look at what Melvin Ingram did at the end of the last Sunday's game. He had the sack, he had the forced fumble, the fumble recovery, and that ultimately led to the go-ahead score. And Von Miller is more than capable of pulling off a Melvin Ingram type of move. But, you know, the other thing is their linebackers can bring a lot of pressure, too. This is a 3-4 defense that the Giants are going to be seeing, which, for the most part, they've been seeing 4-3 defenses. So this is going to be a little bit newer of a curveball that the Giants will be seeing. And
yeah, technically, Von Miller is a linebacker. But
correct.
A
that's where
rusher.
He lines right. up. That's why I always refer to him as a pass rusher.
Right.
Because guys like that, they move around so much.
And I think that's one good thing that Pro Football Focus does. They've kind of changed the categories from inside. Their three categories are inside defensive linemen, edge defenders, and then inside linebackers and outside 4-3
and
linebackers.
That makes sense.
And I think that's how you have to do it.
Yeah, because there are players that are outside linebackers that are just as productive as ends. So why would you want to, in my opinion, you know, have two separate categories when it's fair to compare guys on the edge at the linebacker position that are capable of collecting 7 to 8 sacks? I mean, I still would put them in the same conversation as some of the top defensive ends in this league.
For example, Sean Lee's an outside linebacker. He plays weak side linebacker for the Cowboys. Would you even think about putting him in the same category in terms of a type of player as Von Miller? course
not. Not at all.
They do totally different things. So that's why you separate that
yeah.
way.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think you need to look at, obviously, the profile of the player, where the player is lined up. I mean, a guy like Sean Lee, remember, he started in the middle in his career,
correct.
Too. And then he moved outside to try to preserve his health and prevent injuries. But, no, he is certainly not a Von Miller. And I think you notice that based on Sean Lee's numbers. He's a tackling machine. He's interception type of guy, but he's certainly not a sack type of guy. And that's something that, you know, clearly jumps out to you when you look at the prominent pass rushers in this league. And that's why I think, John, speaking of that, it's easy to overlook Denver. Not that anybody is overlooking Denver, but, you know, when you look at just a name, Von Miller really is their biggest name on defense. They don't have – I mean, Brandon Marshall –
Aqib Talib is a name,
I'm looking at the front seven.
Oh, okay.
I should have specified. Front seven?
No.
You look at the names –
Derek Wolfe.
Yeah, you're not enamored by these names.
No.
But they play good as a unit. It's a very well-disciplined group. And Vance Joseph, who is the head coach, but remember, his background has been defense. He was the Dolphins' defensive coordinator last season. He was under Marvin Lewis with the Bengals for many years. I mean, that's their bread and butter, and that hasn't changed, even though they've had some turnover on the coaching staff over the last few seasons with Gary Kubiak's health issues. So, you know, this is still just as impressive of a defense as last season, even though they've changed some coaches. And, you know, the other thing that's important, you were talking about protecting the football, not playing from behind, not airing it out. Well, how do you do that? You run the football. The problem is Denver's number one against the run. They're only allowing just over 50 yards per game. And only one running back this season has had over 50 rushing yards as an individual. That, coincidentally, was Melvin Gordon, who the Giants faced last Sunday. It's very difficult to find openings on the ground.
Yeah, it took them about 20 carries to get there, too.
Yeah. Yards per carry was not great.
They held Ezekiel Elliott to 8 yards on 9 rushes. And, yes, the Cowboys' offense has not been the same this year in terms of running the ball, but still, that's a ridiculously impressive feat to pull something like that off. And we should, Lance, real quickly before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Touch on the Broncos' offense, and Mike McCoy's back as their offensive coordinator. And I think you have to give him credit, but more importantly, you have to give Trevor Siemian credit for taking the step he has, I think, in his second year here, because he looks like a much more confident quarterback. He's willing to go down the field with the ball, much more than he has in years past. And he's making fewer mistakes. And I think you've seen a big jump from him in his second year. And that's then opened up the running game. C.J. Anderson's having a very good year to start the season. He's been very good. And I think the offensive line has taken a big step forward, too. They redid a lot of that offensive line in the offseason. And I think all those three things together, the Broncos' offense is much, much better than it was last season.
Well, I think you hit it right on the nose. The running game is such an important element of that offense. Over 140 yards they're averaging per game. They have C.J. Anderson, who's the workhorse. But, you know, I think they've utilized Jamaal Charles very nicely. They've picked their spots. Yep. He's been extremely effective, and that means that Siemian doesn't have to be Peyton Manning. He doesn't have to necessarily look to throw for 300 yards per game and air it out and put the ball in danger, because this is the type of team that if they can run the ball 35 to 40 times, John, they'll do it. And that's more of a reason why the Giants need to be careful with the football. And they also, and we've been saying this every single week, I mean, you got to get off the field on third down against a team like this. Because Denver, John, if they get hot, Denver will put together a 9-minute drive, which has 15 to 16 plays. And Trevor Siemian could wind up throwing the ball just 4 times. Because if you look at the numbers this year, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas are not jumping off the page. But you know why they're not jumping off the page? It has nothing to do with these guys are not producing, these guys are not catching the football. It's that the at-bats are not there. Because Denver's mindset is, if we're winning games, if we're playing in front, if we're playing with comfort, and we're playing with the lead, there is no reason why we should be forcing the ball down the field.
And the Giants right now are 25th in the league, 43% on third down on defense, a number that has to get better.
Yeah.
They're simply not getting off the field, and a lot of that, frankly, is because the run game early in downs is putting them in third and short. It makes it a lot harder for Steve Spagnuolo to do what he's going to do. And I think they're also struggling, Lance, to get to the quarterback with 4 guys. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo's had the blitz a lot more this year than he has in the cup, in, you know, last season, especially when you had JPP and Vernon being very disruptive off the edge. And look, I think his blitzes are effective. They get home. But you can't make a living blitzing. Eventually, teams are going to beat you with big plays if you're going to put your secondary guys out on islands like that. And something's got to give here. And, you know, if Olivier Vernon's not playing again, no Romeo Okwara. I mean, it's Kerry Wynn and Cappy and Avery Moss that are going to be the guys that will back those guys up. And we know JPP was banged up heading into last week. He was not on the injury report at all this week. But, I mean, they have to do better. And you're right, they have to stop the run. But C.J. Anderson is having a really nice year.
Well, he's been effective, as I mentioned, Jamal Charles, too. You know, they're going to throw different personnel, but I'll even add another name, John.
Devontae Booker coming back?
Devontae Booker is also a guy to watch out for, but from a defensive perspective, I mean, you were listing all the injuries on the defensive line. Remember, you're down DRC, too. So, you know,
that's a really good point.
Do you want to expose...
I didn't mention him. You're right.
Do you want to expose your secondary with taking your fair share of chances on the blitz? I think that it's really
going to Ross Cockrell,
be...
by the way, is taking snaps at the slot for DRC.
Correct. He will be a big part of it. And then I'm assuming, given the fact that if Landon Collins misses the game, you'll have Andrew Adams and Nat Burhe probably very well in the mix to complement Darian Thompson.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. And then you have Cockrell, you have Michael Hunter, of course. Dante Dion came up, replaced DRC in the roster, took his roster spot. That was announced yesterday along with the indefinite suspension. And also on the DRC front, I should bring up, too, Ben McAdoo said today to the media that he will revisit that with DRC next Monday. So I suppose that means there's a chance that,
he could return.
The suspension could be lifted next Monday or could be maybe expanded through the bye. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
One last thing I want to touch on before we open up the phone lines. I think special teams, we've hinted at it, but how about the return game? Considering Dwayne Harris and Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard, who you would probably make a good case are the top three on the depth chart.
And Tom Quinn basically said that when he spoke to the media a couple days ago.
Correct. So everybody who was asking him questions was trying to get an idea. Well, who
here comes
you?
Travis Rudolph. He caught punts in the preseason, so I imagine Rudolph will be your punt returner. And I think Vereen and Darko will be your two kick guys. That would be my bet.
That makes sense. It's just I'm looking at it, not a lot of at bats for the players.
When you have a rookie out there returning punts, you get nervous.
Oh, without a doubt. And let's also...
And even last night, Christian McCaffrey, who returned punts like crazy at Stanford, muffed the punt. He managed to recover it, but he still muffed it.
Well, and the Eagles had an issue, too, with Patrick Robinson losing the ball. Unfortunately, they recovered it. But, you know, even though Travis Rudolph did have some experience in the preseason, remember, one of the things we talked about in the offseason was that he was not utilized on special teams at Florida State because he was mainly an offensive guy. But in order to make the team, he would have to adjust to special teams. Well, now he's on the roster. Can't think of a better opportunity to make some inroads on this squad than make some type of a play on special teams.
And I know they asked the questions about losing Dwayne Harris as a gunner, but you know who your other gunner was? Roger Lewis.
And now he's going to take on more snaps on offense.
Correct. So can he also be a gunner now?
I think that's a great point. And Tom Quinn, when he was talking to the media, one of the things he pointed out, because he said, listen, it's not so simple that we just take the fourth guy on the depth chart. If the fourth guy now increases his offensive snaps, we have to be careful that we're not killing him in addition to what he has to do on special teams. So it's almost like a wait-and-see approach, I think, for Tom Quinn.
I can't imagine that Lewis is going to be one of the gunners with the role he's going to have to play on offense. I can't imagine. How can you ask him to do that?
When you also want to make sure that these guys get through a game, too. I'm not trying to make jokes, but you just came off a game where you lost four wide receivers. You can't afford now to expose these guys to more plays. And I'm one who I've debated with fans constantly. Remember we had the debates about should you use Beckham and people like, no, I'm always for maximizing your roster. But under these circumstances, John, I think you have to be a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you.
I think you got to be cautious.
Yeah.
Normally, I would say, you know what? Hey, wide receiver, special teams, let them do everything. But given the fact that they've been hammered by so many injuries and they're down to the fourth and fifth guys on the depth chart, I think you have to be very careful in terms of exposing these guys so much.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Okay, that's
always
dangerous.
After this game, you will be a Ed Egan will be your new favorite player on the Giants roster.
Guys. I mean, I thought you were going to go with Dante Dion, too, because we really haven't seen him have much of an opportunity in the regular
season.
That's
true, but I think there's a better chance that Ed Egan gets more snaps this
week
than Dante Dion.
I could see myself.
I think both those guys are of similar statures, no?
No, I would agree. They fall right into my category. However, we should warn the audience that when I have gotten behind individuals, it hasn't necessarily bode very well for them.
The curse of Trindon Holiday.
Yes, it's the Trindon Holiday curse.
Yes.
Yes, got really behind him, thought he had a great shot to help on special teams, and he didn't even make it through training camp. So I'll leave it at that.
Is that a hamstring or a foot he
hamstring
had?
Hamstring. Injury. Oh, yes, the very lingering hamstring injury, as I like to call it.
All right, let's do it, folks. 201-939-4513. Billy is in New Jersey. What's up, Billy?
Good. How are you guys? John, Lance, how are you?
What's up, bud?
I want to speak about the mood of the team, man. They don't seem like they enjoy playing with each other this year. And, you know, I don't know what – I know success breeds happiness and everybody's having fun, but it doesn't seem like they're having fun.
Billy, do you know why they're not having fun? I can tell you why they're not having fun. They're 0-5. No one's having a lot of fun when they're 0-5.
Yeah, I know. I'm miserable too, man. But you know, the thing of it is that the coach, Coach Mack, you know, I really don't have anything against the guy, but I don't think he likes ugly football. I really don't. I think he enjoys pinball football. You know, four wide receiver sets, and you know, you brought two hulks in as tight ends, right? And you bring in a fullback, and I think he did all this because of the media and us as fans getting on this. But he got to realize this is New York. This is like Green Bay. We're gonna voice our opinion. It doesn't seem like he likes the media. You know, I watch every day, and he got to play Smash Mouth football. And I think that the makeup of the team is his personality.
Billy, I'm going to make one point to you on your initial point of him not liking ugly football very quickly. Because me, Lance wasn't there, but I sat in production meetings before a couple of preseason games. And he said this on multiple occasions. And he even said it to the media, I think, right before the season started. And he said, look, guys, and this was the impression I think most people had before the year. We're heading into this year. The strength of this team is the defense, right? That's where they went out and spent all the money in free agency a couple years ago. Vernon, Jenkins, Landon Collins, Snacks Harrison, JPP. Go down the list. We're going to play offensively to maximize our defense. If we're going to win, we're going to win with our defense. And I think Ben McAdoo had every intention this year of being a more ball control, run the football, rely on your defense type of team. Here's the problem with that, and here's why it didn't work. The team couldn't run the football, and the team couldn't stop the run. So when you can't run the ball offensively, and then your defense can't get off the field because they can't stop the run or get off the field on third downs, and they're not putting your offense back on the field, you can't play that way. The Giants have trailed in every single game this year. They have not – in fact, before this prior week, I think I saw a stat on TV, Lance. Didn't the Giants have the fewest amount of minutes leading in a game besides, like, the Browns or something like that? They were towards the bottom of the league. And unless you can run the ball, Billy, and stop the run, you can't play ugly football. It's not going to work.
John, but it boils down to attitude. The coach got to have that mentality.
No, it doesn't.
Have that attitude.
Billy, I could have the best attitude in the world. If my guys can't block it up, my running backs can't gain yards, and my defensive linemen and linebackers can't tackle, it doesn't matter what my attitude is. The players have got to be able to do it.
It's execution. That's what it comes down to.
But what I mean, John, is he got to preach physicality. The team is not physical. The team is not physical.
Billy, how many times have you heard him say, I want my team to be a heavy-handed football team?
He says that all the time.
You've heard it a bajillion times. A bajillion.
I know, John. He says it all the time.
Right.
But he's not putting the right players out there to play smash-mouth football. You're the NFC East, man. You gotta maximize your team. You got your fullback that you need. We forgave them. Fullback got hurt last year. We forgave him for that. Now you got a fullback. Now you got some hulking tight ends in there. Man, line those guys up and let them beat the crap out of the other team. And that's what they got to do to Von Miller. They got to let they got to run directly at him and let those big boys beat his butt.
Billy, they averaged less than 2 yards per carry their first two games.
Hey, Wayne Gorman, look, John, I've been watching everything. I listen to you guys every day. I listen to everything. I'm a second-time caller, but I just love listening to you guys.
And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Especially you and Lance, you know?
Now, Billy, here's the thing. Look, and I think you're right. The last 2 weeks they've run the ball a lot better. And then maybe they can move in that direction now with the wide receivers being banged up, and you can try to do that. But, again, it also reflects on the defense too. It's hard to play grinded out smash mouth offense when your defense is giving up leads and struggling. And I think it's hard to point the finger at management and the coaching staffs when they're playing JPP, OV, Snacks, these guys, all these snaps, and they're not getting any stops on defense to get the offense back on the field. And they did try to run the ball earlier this year. They just didn't have any success. Now you're seeing more success now. So are you telling me then that McAdoo's attitude has changed since the first two games, if it's about the attitude, or is it something else?
Well, and the other thing that I want to see moving forward is, you know, they did run the ball effectively. However, they ran the ball effectively against one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL. Let's face it.
And the week before, the Bucs were missing their two best linebackers.
So this, to me, is a significant test because now you're going up against the number one rushing
defense. It's a
great point. If you go back to running the ball for, like, 70 yards and 2 yards a carry, then, you know, I think you got to step back and wonder, was that just taking advantage of a bad defense, or has the philosophy, has the execution changed? It's a wait-and-see type of thing right now, as far as I'm concerned.
You're still not following me. The deal of it is, you're on the 2 yard line. You got all the, players that you need to run the ball in. You can't tell me that Wayne Gallman cannot run that ball in for 2 yards.
Hey, Billy, I have a question for you. Do you remember, Billy? Do you remember what happened on 4th and 1 when they tried to run up the middle with Orleans Darkwa on the goal line? How'd that work out?
They got smacked.
Well, because Billy, they allowed, by the time Darko got the handoff.
And Billy, thanks for the call, man. We got to run, pal.
You know, so that's why it goes back to execution. The philosophy, I think, has been there that they want to be able to run the football. But if the execution's not there, I mean, we could sit here and talk about being creative, this and that. Now, I know people will counter on the play that you're referencing, the fact that there was no fullback in on that play. But if there was barely any room for Darko to operate, by the time he got the carry, even if Ellison's blocking for him, John, I'm still not sold on the fact that he's going to have any more success.
No, I'm not buying that.
So, I mean, people I know that are going to counter, they're going to be like, well, if a fullback was on the field, there would have been more success. If you go back and you watch that play, by the time Darkwa gets the ball from Eli Manning, there is an eagle right in his face.
Oh, no, on his legs.
He doesn't even have an opportunity to move left or right.
He's being wrapped up around his legs as he gets the handoff.
The play is over once the handoff happens. So, fullback or no fullback, I don't see how that changes the dynamics of the play. I mean, that's the reality of the circumstance.
Again, maybe you don't believe me, and if you don't want to, that's fine. I'm not going to convince you otherwise. I could just tell you what Ben McAdoo said to us in the preseason. That's how he wanted to play. The defense hasn't worked out the way people thought, and it's obviously we know the issues on the offense with the run game. So, and again, let's see if they can do it against a better defense now.
Yeah, that's why, to me, this is, and I know people are going to be like, well, you know, if they're playing from behind, you're still not going to get a true test. But, you know, even early in the game, you know, this is one of the most respectable run defenses in the NFL. Let's see whether or not they can continue that momentum that they showed over the last 2 weeks against the Bucs and the Chargers.
Jason up in Maine. How are you, Jason?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Jason. How are you, pal?
Pretty good. Trying to get ready for this game on Sunday night. Don't know what's going to happen. But I'm just wondering, you guys have seen a lot of offensive line. Well, all of us have offensive line combinations this year with different players coming and going, switching places. I'm just wondering, in your guys' opinion, is there a line combination that you guys think is the best one? Like, what would you guys say is the best combination you've seen so far this year as far as pass protection and being able to run the ball?
That's a good question. I'd say if I had to put it out there for myself, I would put Pugh at right tackle because I think they've had a lot of issues there. I think whether it's Bobby Yart's injury or on the year or just him not getting better the way people thought, whichever one it is, I think Pugh has been better at right tackle in the games he's played than Bobby Hart.
Yeah.
I'll be honest about that. That's my opinion. The coaches might disagree with me, but from what I've seen, that's what I think. Right guard's tough. John Jerry has had some issues this year, especially early in the year, dealing with some of those stunts. I think they have run the ball better with DJ Fluker at right guard. I think he's better in the run game. But we've also seen BJ Fluker struggle mightily with pass rush and handling twists and stunts. And the last thing you want to do is have Eli get pressure inside. So flip a coin, Jerry Fluker. I get going both ways. I think both guys have strengths and weaknesses, and I think both are imperfect. I would have Brett Jones and Richburg be at center and left guard at this point. I know you're undersized, and you can't really run a lot of power behind those guys because they're not the biggest in the world, but I think they make the fewest mental mistakes, and I like that. And I think you have to leave Eric Flowers at left tackle only because, guess what, there's no one else on the team that I think is going to be better than him in that spot.
Yeah, Chad Wheeler doesn't have a lot of experience, so you have to take that into consideration. I mean, you don't just make a change for the sake of making a change. You want to make sure that there's somewhat of an upgrade.
What would you do?
Well, I would agree with you in terms of I think Fluker has provided a little bit more of a push when he's been at right guard for the ground game. And then we've seen mixed results in terms of pass protection. But I don't think it's a coincidence that the running game surge has coincided when Fluker has been in the game. I don't think you could dismiss it, and I don't think you should overlook that. And I do think that Pugh provided some stability in the two games when he was at right tackle. And I've always been fine with putting Brett Jones at center or left guard. So I am fine with if they did want to say, you know what, that Fluker or that Jerry and Pugh combination is ideal for the right side. I don't think that would hurt them moving forward.
Oh, okay. All right. Just one other question for you. Don't know a whole lot about the new receivers coming in. I know they come off the practice squad and things, but just give us an X factor, something for Sunday night. If there's a, if there's one of these receivers coming in that's going to be a surprise player, maybe somebody that surprises Denver a little bit, who would that be? And I'll take it off the air.
Thanks Jason. I think Tavarus King's the guy, only because he's been in the league for a long time. He knows the playbook. He's made plays in big games before, going back to last year in the playoff game. He's got speed. He can beat guys in a straight line. I would go Tavarus King of the group myself. Well,
King had that big play against Green Bay in the postseason. Like you mentioned, he's been on a number of practice squads. I mean, I wouldn't dismiss and overlook Travis Rudolph. Rudolph's got speed, too. Rudolph has great athleticism. Granted, I know it was in the preseason, and, you know, that's not necessarily saying much. It's a different ballgame when you're going up against high-caliber Pro Bowl corners, but would not be surprised if they could get Rudolph out in open space. You could see that he's going to be able to do some damage as well.
Absolutely. And by the way, again, that offensive line combination, just my opinion. The coaches probably do think differently, and my opinion compared to theirs is completely uneducated. They obviously know a lot more about this than I do. But from what I've seen, that's my humble opinion. Travis in Queens, he's up next. Hi, Travis.
John and Lance, how you guys doing?
Hi, Travis. What's up, Travis?
What we got?
Good. I want to start off by talking about yesterday, Lance and Cole. But this is not my point, but you guys kind of, I believe, contradicted you guys self for the fact that you guys were saying that Denver, the offensive line, getting Larry.
Ronald like, Leary, you're talking about.
Right. Didn't really, as far as them paying for him, was they overpaid for him, and he hasn't produced. But, and then you guys, when callers will call up, and talk about draft, you would say it's too early. And it's too early to say that Ronald Leary didn't produce yet, and they got the number one running game in the NFL right now.
I would say, just from my perspective, I think Ronald Leary has done a real good job for
them. Paul had mentioned that he thought that Ronald Leary was overpaid, from what I recall in yesterday's conversation. What I
the
said was that
overpaid.
What happened?
He said free agents. I think based on what the guard market was, Ronald Leary got what you'd usually what you'd give a starting guard, the way the market is now, at least, right?
Well, I mean, sure, considering where contracts have gone.
Right.
I think, though, what the point that we were making from a larger scale is a lot of individuals on the offensive line were thrown a great deal of money on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, sure.
And that's why when you look back, some of these teams that invested in these offensive linemen, have we seen significant improvement across the board? Denver, I think, is very good at run blocking. I don't think they're very good at pass protection. They've given up the same amount of sacks as the Giants. I don't think you could dismiss that and overlook that. And Leary also has been a little bit banged up in the early stages of the season, and that was somewhat of an issue for him at Dallas. But, I mean, I agree with you. It's still a small sample size to say that a free agent hasn't worked out. And, I mean, I know that that was not the major point. The major point was to look at the market and to see whether or not across the board have offensive line play, has that drastically improved across the board. And, I'm not sold that there has been a great deal of improvement across the board with a lot of offensive lines.
I would say this.
Pass protection has been a problem.
Travis, real quick. I just want to throw my two cents in real quick, and I'll let you finish. I think we've seen an improvement in Minnesota. I think they've redone their offensive line. I think they've been a lot better. I do think the Broncos' running game is years beyond what it was last year. Carolina's still struggling. Seattle's still struggling. Trying to think what I think the Jaguars are probably a little bit better on the offensive line than they were last year.
They're running the ball.
I'm trying to think what other teams really added a lot of guys last year that had struggles in the offensive line. Well, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Yeah, Jacksonville, I mean, their main addition was through the draft with Cam Robinson, much more so than anything else.
Remember, the Broncos are starting a rookie left tackle here.
Correct, with
Garrett Bowles. That's dealing with an injury. Menelik Watson's kind of
he's a new
journeyman,
guy
for lack of a better term.
They rotate their left guard, too.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Travis.
Nah, it's cool. So here's my point, right? I think I was naive to think that the Giants are a good team. Like, you know, last year, 11-5, it's sort of like me selling you a fake watch, but you believe it's real, and come to find out it's fake. It would be devastated, like, oh, man, I got jet. And I think that's what happened to us this year as fans, and me in particular, because here's how I assess being a good team versus a bad team. That 11-5 year, you know, there were games that could have went either way. And the stress that we had, we was getting takeaways, you know, turnovers a lot last year. Now,
which is a fluky stat, by the way, and we've said that
right.
Time and time again. You cannot rely on takeaways season to season.
And also, I think red zone defense
right.
is a part of that too.
Yeah.
Right, and because I really thought, like, you know, yo man, we beat Green Bay, you know, there's a strong chance you have Eli, so on and so forth. But one thing about the two Giants Super Bowl runs that we had and won was we were balanced. Now, the stats probably, you know, didn't prove it. But when you put on the game film and you know, the eye test, we was balanced. You know, when it was time to get a third down or fourth and one, we could hand it to Brandon Jacobs. Whereas, you know what I mean, we were balanced. And then this year, like, you take the offense. We're one-dimensional on offense and defense because, like you guys just alluded to, you have to blitz 1,000 times to get some type of pressure. And then that means you can't generate pressure with four, you know. So I just kind of think that's where, you know, the what happened formula comes from. It's like, yeah, what happened? You know, we all thought it was people picking us to be Super Bowl, and we was really caught off guard.
Well, you know what, Travis, that's why I'm just going to jump in here. That's why, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because during the preseason, we get so many phone calls about the Giants are being disrespected and the rankings are not reflective on what the court of public opinion has to say. And my response is, and, you know, John has weighed in, I think I speak for us all, where, you know, I don't care about rankings. I just don't, because
right.
all they are is they're just pure opinions, and most fans
right.
are going to side with their respective
it's
team
speculation.
And not necessarily look at the big picture perspective. So, you know, what
right.
you're doing is you're now providing a little bit more perspective of why we shouldn't put any hype or stock or substance in rankings. Because I said this on yesterday's program. I'll rehash this. They were 11-5 last season, 8-3 in one possession game.
And you hit it. The difference is the close games.
Right.
Every
right.
time they need to make that one play this year, they've come
they
up
did it.
Short.
That's
last
good.
Year...
All right.
For the most part, they did make those big singular plays when they had a chance.
Yeah.
Then you have weird things like Brad Wing kicking a 15-yard punt, you know, and then kicking a 30-yard, a 25-yard punt.
Back-to-back.
You got a rookie kicker making a 61-yard kick. They're injured
right.
a lot more this year than they were last year. So you can put all those things together, and I think that's where we wind up where we are. And I have one more question for you, Travis, before I say goodbye to you. Are you doing
right.
this phone call next to a cuckoo clock of some kind?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's funny.
You don't have to apologize.
It's okay,
yeah.
Travis.
I'm sorry. But then, so, you know, it's amazing that, like, the Giants, like, you know, you
left.
Guys remember the golf club when Michael got into the whole beef thing and whatnot. And I think it was Clemenza or one of them. He told him, like, no, this is good. Every 10 years or so, you know, you get the blood out and, you know, and start over. Because I think, once this year is over, it's really going to be like, you know, like it's going to be bad, meaning it's going to be a mess. And
you know,
think
Travis,
we should start facing it now.
Well, no, Travis, here's the thing, though, and thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I'm going to go back 3 years, and Lance was here taking calls with me. What calls were we getting when the Giants were 0-6 that year? Fire this guy. Fire that guy. Fire everybody. Oh, they all stink. Get them all out of here. You got to blow it all up, right? Who got fired after that season?
Nobody.
You got to let the season play itself out.
Yeah.
The games, I know the fans don't think they do, but when you make these evaluations, these last 11 games are really, really important. And you just can't ignore what happens in them because of what happened in the first five games. The world doesn't work that way, folks. The last 11 games do matter. You might think the chance of making the playoffs are gone. Mathematically, it's not. But how these players still play, respond to the coaches, and all that, all sorts of stuff matters. It all matters. As John Mara said, when the Giants lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars, what was his quote? He said, when I'm on the whole plane back from Jacksonville, I wanted to fire everybody.
Yep.
That was his quote. Did he?
That was at his end of the season press conference.
Exactly. You don't make those decisions now. You make them at the end of the year when you have a full 16 games and a body of work to make those decisions about. And that's what I'll preempt any questions about that sort of stuff with that answer, because that's the answer I'm going to give folks. So that's it.
Well, I think that's just good life advice, too, that when you make decisions because of emotion, it comes back to bite you and it comes back to haunt you. So this is a big part of the evaluation process for everybody involved in the organization in these next group of games. Even though maybe the mathematics are not in their favor, there's opportunities for the young players to be evaluated. Are they going to be part of this franchise moving forward? Free agents, potentially, guys that are due for contract extensions. I mean, there's a laundry list of things that you can continue to evaluate here moving forward.
Bob in Pennsylvania, he's up next. Hi, Bob.
Happy Friday the 13th. How apropos.
Nothing bad's happened yet, Bob, at least not today. And the Yankees play tonight. Come on, let's get a W for the Yanks.
I'm a mess fan.
See, I figured. I knew. I had a feeling.
Sorry, Bob.
You were dividing the audience right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My condolences.
Doesn't exactly cheer me up either. Listen, guys. I'm gonna. I really don't want to turn into a Charlie, but I feel like before this is like my third call now in the last 3 weeks, so it could get that way. Because the point I'm gonna hammer home.
Go ahead.
First of all, one thing I want to ask you guys.
Yes.
Though, before I speak to Charlie, I'm the guy who was actually invited Charlie. He didn't show up. I was gonna take him to that last game last year against Detroit.
Oh, that's right. You offered a ticket. Well, Bob, to be honest with you, I think that's a good thing that Charlie didn't show up.
You are a lucky man, Bob. Yes. You're a lucky man.
I was feeling sorry for him because everybody was ganging up on him, but it probably was a good thing in retrospect.
It was a very good thing.
Okay,
trust me.
I wanted to ask you guys, speaking of Charlie, did you ever get your lobsters?
You know what? I don't believe Charlie and Jeff have figured out the best way to handle that yet. They're going to come. Charlie's not running away from the bet. They'll get here.
Well, Charlie's looking for the right box. You know.
Well,
honestly,
I think Jeff wants to get him so he can bring him in and show him off.
I've got to make one point before you hang up on me.
Go ahead.
Let me make the point before. I'm going to say a couple other things, but I want to make this one point before I get off.
So get to it. Yep.
I got to agree. You guys are way too young to remember Ray Hanley, but
I remember Ray Hanley.
I know who that is, yeah.
It feels very much like it's the same situation to me. I'm not trying to overreact and gang up on the coach, but who is – I know the defense gave up these late touchdowns and points, but who's the head coach of the defense? Everybody remembers this guy with the diner menu. All he has to do is – I wish he would order that pastrami on rye already, because he's the head coach of the whole team. He's losing this team. Like, it's already apparent. And now – all right, let me ask you one other thing. On that play, Beckham gets hurt. What down was that?
That was second down
because it led to a third and seven.
Yes.
Why the heck were we not running the ball on second and seven when you're in a four-minute offense? Gallman's running the ball well. Why are we throwing the ball to stop the clock? He can't help himself. He's going to go back. He's going to panic. He's going to try and run. He never used the tight end. I haven't seen a fullback yet. I went to the game in Florida. I said, where's the fullback on this team? He can't help himself. He's losing. Okay, the one point I want to make before I'm not on anymore, air anymore. How come it hasn't been talked about too much that also Jack Rabbit walked off the field before the game was over last week?
Well, the explanation Jack Rabbit gave, and I thought it made a lot of sense, is that when the Chargers got the ball back into the game, they took a kneel. And when the kneel was over, there was about 37 seconds left in the game. With the 40-second play clock, the game's going to be over. So Jack Rabbit starts to leave the field. He didn't realize that Ben McAdoo called the timeout. That's why he was already on his way off, because he thought they would just let the clock run out. Then McAdoo called the timeout, so that's why he was off the field. And that's why I think it's
a good look, a guy walking off the field.
And that's fair.
To what DRC did. So there's something where there's smoke, there's fire, guys. He's losing this team.
Well, but Bob, here's the thing.
Why were you not?
not running the ball on second and seven.
Okay, first things first on why you didn't run the ball there. Yes, it makes sense to run the football there, but you know what? You're being aggressive. Odell Beckham Jr. is wide open, and Eli threw a bad pass. That would have been a first down. They would have ran the clock. That is a low-risk throw. It's not like they're throwing the ball down the field on a 10-step, on a 5-7 step drop here.
You're still putting the ball up in the air and risking stopping
no, look,
the clock.
No, look, look, Bob, I agree.
Wasn't trying
Bob,
to
Bob,
run the ball there.
It is,
that's my point.
It is a more risky and a more aggressive play than a run. There's no question about it. I agree with you. No question. But I can't get too mad about the play when Beckham's wide open and if Eli makes a good throw, it's a first down and the game is two more plays closer to being over because you get a new set of downs. You know what I mean?
I don't want to nitpick on a play call here, a play call there, but it's almost like you say, it's almost like it's not an accident when you win the close ones, lose the close ones. The team doesn't seem to have that same fire. They're not really wanting to play for this coach for whatever reason.
Well,
it
but
is.
See,
I
Bob, I think that's a big assumption on your part.
And thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
What I was going to counter to Bob's point about, you know, this is an indication that the team has quit on the coach, they've been in each of the last three games. They have all come down to the wire. If you're getting beat by 25 points,
and the
John,
Lions game wasn't a blowout.
No,
either.
The Lions game, if it wasn't for the punt return, that score is probably a one-possession game,
right,
too. So, yeah, if you want to include the last four, that's fine. I'll give you that. But the point I'm making is they've been in every single game.
Yep.
They just have not executed. They have not made the stops. A sign of a team not showing the fire, using Bob's term, is that, I mean, if you're walking away and you're losing by two scores every single week, then I think it's fair to question where's the energy, where's the fire.
I mean, heck with two scores. I mean, if you go out there and you lose 31-3.
Well, that would be another indication.
Right. Correct.
But we're talking about the last three games have been decided with about a minute to go in the game, John. And it's a matter of the defense not making a stop or a shank punt or the offense turning the ball over.
Or two defenders running into each other and not knocking the ball down.
Yeah, against the Eagles when Alshon Jeffrey.
Or Eli throwing the ball too high for Beckham. That causes the injury. I mean, these are little things.
So, you know, I think what we tend as society in sports to often mix up is there's a distinct difference to me, John, lack of execution and lack of desire.
And lack of effort.
Yes. Those are not synonymous with one another.
No,
but we're making this conversation as if when we're not seeing a team execute, that automatically means that the guys have no desire to go out there and play. And I'm just not seeing that. You're entitled to your opinion if you feel that way, but I just don't think there's an overwhelming amount of evidence to tie those together.
And it's more than fair to criticize the guys for not executing as well as they should.
Absolutely.
That's
and that's what the bulk of our conversations
fair.
Have been about.
And that's absolutely fair. That's why we're here. And the other thing I'll point out, he made the Ray Hanley comparison. Well, I mean, look, Ray Hanley got to finish his second year. It's not like anything happened midseason that year. That's a point, too. People that want to clamoring for things. They're going to evaluate the whole season, folks. And like Lance said, did you get the feeling that this team wasn't trying the last 3 weeks? I certainly didn't.
Yeah,
I
just don't see that.
And now they're really shorthanded. So it's a possibility that they go out there and they do get blown out against Denver. But you know what? That might not be because they're not trying or they're not playing hard or they're not locked in. The Broncos, just talent-wise, because of all the injuries, are better right now. I mean, they just are. I mean, you lost your top four wide receivers because the best secondary in football. Top four. You're missing your starting center. You're missing two of your top three defensive ends. You could be missing your best safety, maybe your best defensive player, Landon Collins. You're missing your slot corner, Dominique Rodgers-Camardi. I mean, count the Pro Bowls. Just count the Pro Bowls that are hurt. It's a lot.
Well, and here's another way to look at it. If you are truly one that subscribes to the philosophy that guys are not going out there and trying hard, I mean, this to me is the one league, John, unlike any other professional sports league, where tomorrow's not guaranteed.
No.
I just don't think players can afford to have that mindset because if they do have that mindset, they're not lasting in this league very long. Guys that are up for contract extensions, what leverage, what position do they have to go out there and say, you know what, I'm just going to go through the reps and the hell with it and not show enough energy. It's just, I don't think you could take that chance in football.
The eye in the sky don't lie, Lance. Everyone sees what you're doing on every single play.
It's all documented on film.
Absolutely.
So if you believe that that's happening, that's fine. Once again, you're entitled to your opinion. I just don't think that that adds up based on how this league is structured. In the NBA, where they've got 5 or 6 year deals and everything's guaranteed, you want to sell me on guys quit, I'll maybe buy that. I think there's a little bit more substance behind that. I just don't think players can afford to have that mindset in the NFL, or else you're not going to have much of a career moving forward.
All right, we got 10 minutes. We got four calls. Let's get them all in. Raphael in Pennsylvania has been on hold the longest. Hi, Raffy.
Yeah, how you doing, John? How you doing, Les?
Hi, Raphael.
What do you got?
I just wanted to talk about free agency. I'd like to hear you guys talk about it. I'm going to just touch on a couple quick points, and I'd like you guys – I'm going to take it off air.
Yeah, real quick.
I'd like you guys to discuss and hear about it.
Sure.
I was wondering why the Giants didn't trade for Adrian Peterson. That was one thing.
Because he's washed up. Question two.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when he was having problems with the team. Like, I think that's – they should have did.
He was washed up then. He's washed up now. Next question.
But free agency, is there anybody in free agency?
Not wasting time, yeah.
Any position?
I'm sorry, say that again.
That'd be one question I'd like to...
Say that again, Raphael. What was your second question? I didn't catch that.
I would like to know if you guys think there's anybody in free agency that could help the Giants out.
I have not looked at free agency next year. Are you talking about guys right now?
Yeah, are you talking about somebody on the street now, or are you talking about next season?
No, somebody on the street now.
No.
I don't think there's anybody. If they're not on a team now, there's a reason.
Correct. Next question. Topic three.
With the Giants, who makes the decisions for drafting? Like, who's actually the person who comes down?
Jerry Reese.
Decisions for drafting?
Jerry Reese is in charge of the draft. The final decisions are his, but it is a team and organizational effort to come to those decisions, but Jerry Reese has the final call.
I think the Giants need to improve on their draft selection, so I think they need to maybe try to upgrade their GM position because that's a position to me that's been lacking. Every time in the draft, seems like Kareem Hunt was there, a couple people were there, even Samaj Perine. I mean, I think they should have tried to get him maybe even earlier than off the board. You know,
Perine's been struggling, Raphael, with Washington.
Coleman looks better than Perine does.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to use him, that would not be the first guy that I would make a case for because he's had issues in terms of ball security.
Well, Kareem Hunt was the guy I was the highest on, actually.
Well, Kareem, but
he,
you know, here,
be Ahmad Bradshaw.
Here's the other thing, you know, keep in mind.
You can list 50 teams that – I mean, 30 teams that passed on Kareem Hunt, by the way. He was second-round pick.
Well, and you know what? We probably are not even talking about Kareem Hunt.
And thanks for the call, Raphael.
They're starting running back. So, I mean, it's easy 20-20 hindsight.
I think he would have played a little bit, but he wouldn't be having the ridiculous year he has now.
I don't think he would have had his prominent
role.
I mean, they lost their starting running back right before the season started. So, that changed things drastically in terms of the depth chart.
Steve in D.C. Long time no speak, Stevie.
No, thanks for taking my call. I was beginning to wonder if I was banned, man, because I've been giving Russ the blues on the chat, and you know I love the show, man. But I'm not going to go on that, man. But
go ahead.
You just gotta watch him, man, because he's just doing way too much extra for the fans. It's really kind of disrespectful. But I want to call about that because I got a lot to say. I know I talk fast, so I just want to get what I got to say out. Y'all can just have at it when I hang up. But I want to go back to 2015 because I'm my biggest gripe. I'm going to make no qualms about it. If y'all want to hang up with somebody, my biggest gripe is McAdoo. And that's being nice just by calling by his name, even though most people don't, the players don't even call him coach, which is alarming to me anyway. Nobody even calls him coach, which should say a lot to you. But I'm going to go back to 2015 since the man first got here and we had an offense that we thought was something, but really was nothing without Odell Beckham. And the common theme throughout his tenure up here is why we're losing, or whether we're winning or losing. The common negative thing that has been what on our offense? It's been the time of possession. We continue to lose it even when we win. What do you guys got to say about that?
Well, that's what happens when you don't run the football effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, those two things go hand in hand, Steve. What team at the bottom of the rankings in rushing yards per game is up there in time of possession? If you go over the last 5 or 6 years,
and
those hand in hand.
And throw on top of that, too, is that the Giants did want to try to, last year especially, pick up the pace and run a little bit more no huddle. So I would put those two things in combination, Steve.
Well, we all know the fans pretty much, the sense of the game. This man just doesn't want to run the ball. We ran it less than 25% of the time. Listen, it's no excuse. It's making, defense cheat on us, making our offensive line look worse than it actually is. And that's going to go to my next thing. Everyone digressed on the offensive line. Everyone. Most of the fans were like, we needed a left tackle. We needed a left tackle. Well, Flowers is pretty much playing like the best lineman on the line at this point anyway. You know, I mean, that's certainly not the worst. But one thing for sure is every single player has digressed. I mean, how do you explain that?
Well, I mean, listen, there's been some guys that have had their fair share of ups and downs. Fluker is new to the team, so you can't really argue he digressed. He wasn't even here last season.
And
put him on the field, and we all can see him, the only one getting pushed. He's the only one getting pushed, and he won't play him.
Well, that's why they obviously mixed him in the last week,
and
because
Steve,
I think they saw that.
And Steve, I'm not sure it's fair this year to really take Pugh to task, because you've asked him to switch positions, and I think he's done a pretty darn good job being the emergency backup right tackle.
No problem. My bigger point, John, is this. I feel like the coaching is letting us down all the way around. The special teams, you know, the defense, everything. We came in here with what I know was the 11-5 record built on my defense. And now what? Now, between the time of possession and not running the ball, they're on the field that much more. And here's my next point. You know, the biggest problem is we have with, you know, the time of possession is we're hurrying too fast to the line. The last couple games where we decided to slow it down and stop trying to sucker punch people and actually impose our will, we're able to run the ball. The defense is a little bit more efficient. Man, all this. We got the West Coast offense is designed for Yak, which is not Eli's strength, the short ball. But we won't do anything to help our two-time Super Bowl winning MVP quarterback. Zero confidence, none at all. And then to put it on the Eli, reason why Jack Rabbit said, because McAdoo never calls timeout, and that's been the biggest problem I had with him. His no clock management at all. He's the worst I've ever seen. It's a crime how bad his clock management is. But to see Eli throw that interception, it was vintage Eli. When you hurry him up like that, we should have been running the ball. And that's it. I hope this experiment is over as soon as possible. I never had confidence in him from the time he got here through last year when we were 11-5. So I just hope it's over. You know what? I just don't know what it's going to take. But Ray Hanley, he is not. He needs to go. And that's all. I appreciate y'all taking my call. I know you don't even have to speak on it because I know you can't. And I'm just thankful you took my call. Guys, have a great Friday.
You too, Steve. Good to hear from you, pal. Hope everything's well down there in D.C. for you. Len in Maryland. He's up next. Hi, Len.
How you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Len? What do you got for us?
My old friend Steve from D.C.
Did I put you and Steve on the air at the same time, or did I put you and Shakes on the air at the same time? I don't remember.
John,
I think it was Shakes.
John, one of the three great moments in Big Blue Kickoff live history. Steve and I on the line. Talking about life in Columbia, Maryland, where he went to school.
That's right.
Great moment. All right, listen. Just opinion, not an evaluation. If you want to start to measure, this is what I think. And I'm not making a judgment here. I'm just making. If you want to start to measure quit in a football team, the first people you look at is the cornerbacks. How are they handling blocks? How are they handling their tackles? Do they appear to be shying away? I say cornerbacks because they're the smallest guys on the field. And when that offensive lineman is coming around the corner, it's cold and wet in December. How do you handle it? Look at the D-backs first. Check out the D-backs. They'll give you a first hint of whether the team is quitting. Listen, last Sunday, Eli's got to hit that pass to Beckham in the first quarter.
He has to. Yeah, in the first quarter. He has to hit that pass, and he has to hit the slant. Both those.
He's got to hit that pass.
You're right.
It's a touchdown.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. 100%.
I know Rivers overthrew one too.
He did. He overthrew Travis Benjamin. So I was going to say, if you're going to make the argument that if you take back the Beckham touchdown, I'm going to counter you with, well, then give Rivers the Benjamin.
But I think Len's bigger point though is that that is a momentum changing play.
And I don't disagree.
It's a throw that Eli should make.
I just don't want to hear, well, if we add these 7 points, those arguments I can't stand. Yeah, go ahead.
You got to strike there. You just have to strike there.
Yeah, agreed.
Tough game on Sunday night. Lance, I want to – here's just a little bit of history. Actually, this is for John. Lance, I hope you'll comment also. You had a conversation earlier in the show about, how guys are responding and so forth. And, I think they're still playing hard. I haven't seen any signs of it. The plays just aren't there. I mean, we're not putting the iron of the league out on the field. I mean, look at who we're going to put out on the field on offense on Sunday night. I mean, come on. Yeah, Tavares King, good guys, made some plays for us. But
you know, the second week of the season, we told Kavaris King he couldn't play in this league.
Well, Len, think of it this way.
And then for 3 weeks, 31 other teams told him he couldn't play in the NFL.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if I came on the air on this show on June 1st, 2017, and I said to you, in week five against the Broncos, the Giants would be rolling out as starters Brett Jones, Tavares King, Roger Lewis,
Ed Egan.
And Ed Egan as their slot receiver. I mean, what would your reaction be to that?
Listen, Ed Egan wasn't even on our original 90-man roster to start a training camp.
Correct.
We only saw him for 2 weeks at the end.
Yep. Right.
We only saw him for two. I mean, come on. Look who we'll put. Listen, we got a guy on our practice squad, Marquise Bundy. He's a big guy. He might be the next man up.
He could be. Yeah. Who knows? It could be him, or it could be Darius Powell, who they added this week too.
Yeah, maybe it's Darius Powell, but I think it's going to be him. Look, two tight ends on Sunday night started off with the run game. I mean, we just got to try to get to the fourth quarter with a shot and, you know, and take it from there. I think it's got to have to be a very conservative game plan. And I think we start with the two tight ends, one running back, and you try to run it. And we try to run it straight ahead. I mean, no fooling around with the outside. John, you were going to look something up for me, and I'm not going to be angry if you didn't do it. But there was a reference to the Eagles game, the goal line play. And Lance said, Darkwing never had a chance. The offensive tackle was in the backfield. It didn't make any difference if we had a fullback. I think all of that is correct. I made a statement after that game. That guy had to have jumped, Lance. He had to have jumped the count.
I do not believe he was offside.
I do not believe he was offside. You were going to go back to the film.
I did. He was not offsides on that play.
I just think he was good anticipation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And here's the other thing. And here's the other thing, Len. Even if he was offsides, it didn't get called. So, you know, I mean, it's revisionist history.
I think the point I tried to make at that time was, you know, why not? Jump the gun. They might not call it. I mean, what do you lose?
Half
yard.
We
were on the six-inch line. What do you go to, the three-inch line?
No, Len, you're absolutely right.
Good point.
Thanks for the call, Len. We got to run, pal.
All right, Len.
Adam in Ohio. He's our final caller. What's up, Adam?
Hey, thanks, guys. I'll try to be quick for you.
Thank you.
Two callers ago, I bet he wasn't that upset with the slant call to Beckham in December against the Cowboys on second down when Beckham housed it. Exact same defense, exact same route. If it's not an errant throw, he probably has a chance to do the same thing.
Single high safety, middle open of the field. If he hits him in stride, he has a chance to turn it into a big play. Absolutely.
Absolutely, anytime. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20. That's a decent play call. It's just an errant throw.
Right.
You know, the other guy who says, you know, McAdoo is my biggest stop in time of possession. Well, you know, I agree with time of possession, but it's hard to fault time of possession when you hit two home runs. Are you mad about the deep ball now? If we win time of possession but we don't score the deep ball to Lewis and Beckham, are you happier? You know what I mean? That's going to affect your time of possession when you have a 32 and a 48
yard touchdown. That's true, but in fairness this year, at least for the first four games, you weren't getting the explosive plays either, and you were having issues on both sides.
Yeah, I think he was more referencing last season how when you get a lot of explosive plays, that impacts time of possession. I think that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think it's a disappointing time as a Giants fan. You know, I try to keep an optimistic spin on this. I'm not unrealistic. I don't think we're going to have the success that we hope for. Maybe we will. I just hope these guys find a way to, you know, bring it together, stand together, and say, you know, look, we faced the toughest times. It didn't break us. We get healthy again eventually. We go back to the drawing board. We get a clean slate. We've already been through the worst. Now let's go do the best.
You know, I don't
know who you look to for that. Collins, maybe, JPP, OV to rally that. But, you know, I hope they can do it because I think ultimately we will be healthy, probably have a decent draft pick, and you know, back to the drawing board and do next year what we were supposed to do this year.
That's the goal. Thanks for the call, pal.
Absolutely.
And they'll try to do it on Sunday night and get the ball rolling in a very difficult game against the Denver Broncos.
Different environment to play in, difficult team to play against, a lot of factors that
injuries
are not necessarily in the Giants' favor.
Yeah. It'll be fun. All right. We'll see you on Sunday night. Pre-game show's on WFAN because the Yankees are not playing on Sunday.
The
NLCS that is off day in the ALCS, so we will be on our normal station, our normal time. And actually, unless the Yankees advance, I don't believe we're going to be preempted the following week against the Seahawks either. I think the Yankees are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, off day Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that sounds about right.
Six
correct.
And seven.
Sunday's a travel day after they play tonight and tomorrow.
Correct.
And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like you said, yes, that schedule sounds to be on point.
So we should be on FAN the next 2 weeks. 6:30 pregame start on Sunday night. This guy, Paul Dottino, and Jeff Fiegels will be with you, getting ready for Giants and Broncos. I'll be in Denver. Lance will be in the comfy, warm studios at WFAN. And we'll have all the pregame action for you, again, starting at 6:30 on Sunday. And then we'll have the recap on Monday on Big Blue Kickoff Live. That's going to be Lance and Fiegels, because Paul and I are landing at 6:15 a.m. from that trip to Denver. So that'll Lance and Fiegels on Monday. Get ready for it. I'll be sleeping. We'll see you on Sunday. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one, guys.